Listen, gentlemen, the thing is that Tolkien is dead and Lovecraft is the future.
The future?
Yeah. So I want to hear some people saying that they're going to go vote for YoggSothoth.com in the Ennies and show some bastards what's up.
Hell sure. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. This is OgreCave.com, the Ogre Cave Audio Report, and we're repping for Paul of Cthulhu and YoggSothoth.com. Go to the Ennies, show your support.
Represent.
That's right.
Word. That started this whole thing out on such a positive note. Can we just start the show this way? Can we keep going?
We should.
Let's just start. Hey, who am I talking to?
This is Mike Sugarbaker.
And this is Alan Sugarbaker.
And this is Chris Anderhan.
And this is the Ogre Cave Audio Report, the Metal Years. if Paul Tevis isn't gonna start naming his shows individual weird things, I think we should start doing it. But that's neither here nor there. So we had an Origins.
Hooray!
And I
well,
went.
You had one.
Well, you know, there were other people there.
I suppose.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, okay, now, well, we should clear the air on that, because,
okay.
I mean, I made a note the first day I was there that it felt a little uncrowded, but I mean, that was Thursday.
Okay.
And that was late on Thursday. You know, on the whole, it never felt crowded, but it's not as if I was getting up at the very beginning of, you know, jumping into the exhibit hall, you know?
And the exhibit hall wasn't really your priority this trip out. You were there to do some actual events.
I was there to do some actual events, and I even did some.
Wow.
Excellent.
Which is kind of amazing. But yeah, I played a game of the Shabalhiri Roach, which is really fun. It went kind of silly. Kind of sillier than I wanted to, which I think I noted. But again, as I wrote back when I did my review of my quote review of Primetime Adventures, you know, silly is good. Silly is right. Silly works. People are comfortable with it. It gets a game going, and it's fun.
Sure.
And, you know, one should not be afraid of it. One should not, you know, get all prissy and say, oh, we should be doing some other thing. You know, it works. Most of the online actual play reports that I've read about the Roach have been not silly, but at least funny, you know, so I think that's a goal of the game, and, you know, I'm all right with that. I think that's definitely something that a successful game design should allow for.
So I'm running this game on Saturday, which is like a day and a half now from this taping, so we'll have to compare our experiences.
That's right. And I'm so sad that we will not get to plug the next Endgame Minicon before it happens.
You know, I'm full. It's all right.
Okay.
It's we filled so much faster than last time. So thanks to everyone in the local Bay Area for getting excited.
Now you're split between role playing games and like board and other games this time, correct?
Yeah, we're making tables open for board gamers and card gamers as well. So it's going to be a little cramped. We're expecting to have 50 to 60 people there pretty much all the time.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah.
What's the split as far as role-playing to other?
Well, I've got 6 tables of role-playing at, you know, all day long, from 10 till 11 at night, 10 in the morning till 11 at night. So, you know, I have 3 sessions. I break them up into, you know, 4-hour blocks, and, you know, we got 16 role-playing games playing, so that's pretty exciting. Or, I'm sorry, I said 16, but I didn't mean that. I meant 18.
For a mini-con, that's pretty sizable.
I'm beginning to question my capacity to grow this. I would have to rent space across the street to do that, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah, and you're pretty much the only one running it, right?
Yeah, I handle pretty much 99% of the administration, and The kind folks over at RPGNet handle some nice free advertising for us.
Nice.
Yeah, so I do events at the store. That's my main job, so this isn't stretching my capacity, but I feel pretty busy upon setting it up and then very busy 2 weeks prior to it.
Mm.
So, and I'm constantly juggling events. So, you know, the next one, the next huge one for us is our 5th anniversary party. So,
all right. Well, we're glad that you can be here.
Thank you.
But yeah, Origins.
Origins.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I derailed.
Origins.
No, that's. I mean, I'm really interested in, you know, in the Minicon phenomenon. We can elaborate on that some other time.
Sure.
But yeah, Origins. What else did I do? I got to play. You know, I didn't do that well as far as like being all aggro. I'm gonna play things this time. I kind of tended to revert to a little bit of shyness, and that's kind of it's a vulnerable position when you're wandering this exhibit hall, and people are constantly asking, "Do you want to play stuff? Do you want to play stuff?" Your kind of default position is to just shy away and go, "No, not really." You know, I think it's just kind of an inherently social thing where you just kind of want to hang back when you know all these demo people want something from you.
Well, and I feel the same way when it's not just demo people myself. I go into a con and you'll be walking by a miniature table or something, and you know, hey, what kind of army you got there? You want to play a game 40K? You want to jump in? It's like, no, I just want to go that way. You know, I feel the same way. I think that's inherently one of the problems with social gaming is you have to always be social.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, and demo folks at a big con like Origins are going to be aggressively trying to get people, because they're trying to make their money back. They want you to love their game because of the sweet demo they've put together.
Oh, of course,
Pick it up right then and there. So that you're going to encounter that at any big convention. It's not going to be as bad as like walking through the perfume department at Macy's or something, but it's going to be pretty intense for someone who maybe just wants to hang back and look from a distance, especially.
Well, see, I think that a con situation like this may actually be the male equivalent of walking through the perfume section at Macy's.
Maybe for gamers.
Because it is that kind of a sales situation. Everybody wants something from you.
Yeah, well, that's
very true.
Yeah. That's the dealer's room for you.
Yeah.
They all want to sell.
Yeah. But I did get to play some things, some of which I noted on the website. I did finally get to play Memoir 44. And, you know, I want that game. I just don't quite want it for $50.
There's a lot of stuff in that game, though. You know what I mean?
There is. There is. And I'm kind of being
a understand.
Cheap gamer, but, you
well,
know.
And you know, it's totally, what is it, cost-benefit analysis? Are you going to use that game $50 worth? You know,
yeah.
Or are you just, because you had a good time playing it?
Given that it's a two-player game, that's really what makes it difficult.
Yeah. Now, the exciting thing is, this is not confirmed anywhere, but I have sneaking suspicion that they're going to do a fantasy version of Memoir next year. So.
Well, they almost already have. They've kind of taken the half measure. They've done Command and Colors Agents.
Yeah, but I'm talking true fantasy with giants and, you know, orcs and
okay.
Things like that. That'll appeal to a whole different market than Command and Color Agents. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of Carthage versus Rome historical kind of almost feels like fantasy to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see why somebody who was much deeper into miniatures would think I was totally high for saying that.
Basically, you're totally high for saying that.
Well, okay.
Slap him down right now.
Thesis, antithesis, synthesis.
Yeah, it's all good. All
right.
I did Watsy's absence from the dealer's room, big problem, anyone care? I had a lot of people kind of come in and say, hey, at Origins, did you hear anything about Dreamblade? I'm like, no.
Yeah, see, I think, and I noted this on the weblog, I think they made a big mistake not being there to push Dreamblade.
So I think so, too. Yeah, I really do.
Because really, that's the role of Origins now. It's not the con where products get launched, although a couple of products did get launched, and I enjoyed a couple of them a great deal. But it's the place where you build buzz.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Brennan Taylor of IPR, he published his own original game design, Mortal Coil, here at Origins. And I almost think now that Mortal Coil, instead of the Shabalhiri Roach, will be the big buzz in the RPG of Gen Con.
Really?
Specifically because of that timing. Well, plus a lot of other factors. The fact that it reads great. I mean, I haven't played it, but it reads like a great game. And it looks great.
Can I ask a quick question while I remember?
Sure.
At the IPR booth, or was it the Forge booth? I'm sorry.
There was no Forge booths, just IPR at Origins.
So it was an IPR booth. Okay, yeah. Good. I just didn't want to mislabel it. The new game coming out by the dude who did Burning Wheel.
Burning Empires.
Did they have that there?
No, there's no Burning Empires.
Okay, because that game looks fascinating.
It looks pretty interesting. Burning Wheel is a little rules heavy for my taste.
Me too, but I just think that the approach he's taking to marketing this game is very, very interesting.
Oh, well, Luke Crane of Burning Wheel is probably the king of the marketers as far as indie RPGs goes.
I wouldn't disagree.
He's pretty good at what he does.
Yeah.
He was actually not at the IPR booth. He was at Key 20, but whatever.
Well, that's who's getting his product into retailers.
Yes.
That's who we generally get it from. So.
And if you haven't already, check out our little video from last year of him at
right.
Gen Con SoCal.
From last year at Gen Con SoCal. That was hysterical.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But yeah, we were talking about WotC and their lack of presence.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a big deal.
Anybody else missing of note? I mean, obviously there's people missing, but...
I don't know. Wingnut.
Aw, come on, don't bring the hate down on Aldo.
No, I'm not bringing the hate down on Aldo. He was there.
Okay.
I saw him wandering around, he just didn't have a booth, and I didn't actually get the chance to catch up with him.
There's no reason for a small publisher like Aldo to have a booth when he doesn't have new product.
I guess not at this point.
That's not a surprise. So I'm sure you saw the big ones. Atlas is always represented by Adventure Retail, and they're usually in the same booth as Steve Jackson Games.
They're
all repped by the same people.
That's where Paul was working.
They do a great job. Anything catch your eye in the dealer's room? Anything big releases? You said there were a couple of new releases. Did you only really pay attention to the indie games?
Well, that's one of the things that I'm the most excited about.
Right, I know.
Yeah, Mortal Coil, I did pick up. It looks great. It totally has me wanting to run. I mean, it's a little bit abstract. It doesn't really have a setting that comes with it, although all of the graphics in the game are based on Brennan Taylor's, I think, original campaign that he runs for it, which is like all the old gods hanging out in bars.
Okay.
Like the cover and some of the internal graphics are based on that. It totally has me wanting to run. It's really for anything that has magic in it. It's just very much, it's a diceless, luckless mechanic, but it makes that work, and it does it through bidding. You have tokens, and you just hide how much you're bidding.
Okay.
And then if there's people in a conflict, if there's, two players in a conflict, you hide how much you're bidding, and then you reveal, and then you work stuff out based on that.
Okay.
And you have, a few different stats, and then you have magic tokens and power tokens, and you can spend them in different ways. And you use poker chips for them, and you stack them up, and there's space for doing that on the character sheet, which is very visual, which makes it very cool. And it's just good for anything that has magic in it. It gave me just a complete idea for a campaign. I completely want to run like an anti-Harry Potter kind of game, where you have, preteens who are going to become wizards, but there's no, safe place for them to learn. They just have to go out onto the streets and find people who will teach them to be wizards, and those people are probably kind of crazy and might want to kill them,
So kind of like a cross between Harry Potter and the movie Ghost.
A bit, yeah. That one character from Ghost came to mind. But also I just want, the bad kids. I'm tired of all the wizards being good kids. I want to see the bad kids,
Uh-huh.
Just as a side note, there's a band playing here in Portland pretty soon. The band is from Boston, but there's a band called Harry and the Potters, which is a band that does, in fact, do music about Harry Potter.
Aww.
Which is kind of dorky, but the thing that really makes it work for me is that the opening act is, in fact, Draco and the Malfoys. So,
oh, my God.
If they don't just, totally punk rock, blast it out, and then just destroy their instruments, and then heckle the band for the rest of the day, then that was a missed opportunity. But
yeah. They're not doing their job.
Yeah. But yeah, Mortal Coil looks great.
Okay, what else?
Tell me about AT-43.
I did not get to play the demo, and that's killing me.
Oh.
But yeah, the figs look okay.
Mm-hmm.
The maps look pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It is not, in fact, going to be a collectible game.
Okay.
The way that they're packaging it, I think, looks pretty smart. But if they don't do their marketing job, then, that's not going to necessarily matter.
Right.
And they're doing a really, really crappy marketing job with this game.
Yeah, I think they're just permanently, terminally distracted.
Well, as it has been said many, many times before, Rackham is a miniatures company run by artists, not necessarily by businessmen. So they just kind of do get distracted by the shiny.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. But it is good news that they're not going to be collectible.
That's the one thing I can agree with on anything about AT-43 is that, wow, I'm so excited that it's not going to be randomly packed.
Yeah. And, you know, Dogs of War, people are very happy about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we've been over that.
Yeah. Any other miniature stuff that you ran into? Because that's what I'm interested in. So.
Yeah, miniature stuff. There was Horrorclix, of course.
Oh, they actually had that there. Did they release it?
Oh, yeah. Well, they didn't release it.
Okay, but they sold some.
Yeah, but they had great-looking stuff. They had demo kits in every swag bag.
Nice.
In the reg bags. And the funniest thing about them is that they're packaged in this plastic bag, and the plastic bag has printed on it, "This polybag is not a toy." but while you're reading that text, you're looking through it at a picture of a clown, at this clown figure, and it's like, yes, this bag is a toy, you know, but, yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah, I mean, the game looks good. The game looks fun. Whether that's going to be enough is an open question. But they also showed some things that, while they're not four games that were of a great deal of interest to me,
mm-hmm.
Their packaging is getting a lot better. They're doing fixed figure sets for MechWarrior.
Mm-hmm.
They were selling them there at the show.
Okay.
Just a battle box of some Jade Falcon stuff, and that's fine. But then it gets better. There were fixed figure sets for HeroClix of a bunch of giant characters, probably twice as tall as your average HeroClix figure.
Neat.
And the way these things were packaged was a huge plastic window in the box where you could just mm-hmm. see everybody lined up.
Okay.
Like the X-Men Danger Rooms that they came out with. You haven't seen that?
I haven't seen that. They didn't have that up.
Oh, it's really cool.
It is cool?
It's all the good X-Men in a Danger Room box.
In their classic costumes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, they didn't have that up, I guess, because it's been out. But they had more of that. And they were showing in a little display case an Alien vs. Predator Horrorclix box that really looked cool. It was this
okay.
little tableau of dudes, you know, menacing humans.
Nice.
And those are actually the factions in that expansion, if they hadn't explained. Humans and dudes. That's how it's going to... No, that's not true.
No.
Any pirate stuff that you got to see that was cool?
They had virtually no pirates in their booth.
You want to know why?
Sure.
Tell us, Chris.
Because they're out of all pirates until November.
Oh, dear.
Don't
push it right now at the big con with strategy players and such, because you ran out at the wrong time.
Jesus damn hell. That's
I swear, they are not getting a single break lately. It's, yeah, bad times for WizKids.
Gale Force 9 had some nice pirates displays.
Their mat is cool.
Yeah, their mat is very cool.
Yeah. Okay, so we're done with WizKids. We're moving on to there's two people in this world I've discovered who care about this. It's Mike Merles and me. tell us about Battletech's Total War. Come on, I made you go over to the booth and take a look.
Battletech's Total War is a beautiful reference book.
Okay.
And that's really the best way to characterize it as a product. It's going to be thick. It's going to be seriously thick.
Yeah.
And it's going to be full color.
Yep.
The photos are generally of, you know, scenery plus figures setups,
mm-hmm.
and they're nice.
Okay.
They have it set up really nicely as a reference book where they have a lot of tables in the back,
mm-hmm.
but all of those tables will then refer back to the chapters in the book and the pages in the book where the tables are drawn from in context.
Okay. That's kind of cool.
I looked through it. I didn't understand a whole lot because I'm not a Battletech player.
Chris, you had reservations about this, right?
I got into a big, really long, drawn-out debate on the Battletech forums about this and just kind of gave up after a while. This is a great product for the base. It sure seems like this is a book designed for me, and that's great for me, but Battletech has a really strong stigma of being a very complicated game, and it can be if you let it go there. And I really, really, as a retailer, need an intro product for Battletech. And I know that's going to be the starter box at some point. Don't know when that's coming. well, hopefully it's soon, and I know they totally wish they could have launched that first. But, you know, as Battletech's base dwindles, it's harder and harder and harder to get new people into the game. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, what I would really like to see these guys do is do what, and I've said this before, what Amarillo Design Bureau did with Starfleet Battles and creating a simpler game in Federation Commander. Love to see Battletech have a simpler version of the game out there.
That's another thing I did at the show, by the way, is I went by Federation Commander and Starfleet Battles, those folks.
Okay.
And I had a look at the Federation Commander box that they had mm-hmm. open, and I looked mm-hmm. at that, and if that's the simple version, I should just not ever look at Starfleet Battles.
It's not your type of game, Mike. I totally agree. It's for people like me who have had experience with this type of game in the past and can totally dive right in and, you know, you're playing it in an evening. So, it's fine.
I don't see how anybody could play that thing in an evening, but,
it's okay.
Boy, there were a lot of rules there.
He's got the mad skills.
I understand.
You know, it's sad too, because if I taught you that game, you would have fun playing it.
I'm sure I would.
You just fly around and blow the crap out of stuff. You know, that's you're just doing the big duel, and there's venting plasma, and you know, things are kind of drifting off after they, you know, hit each other with torpedoes.
Well, you know, I wish somebody would put out a high profile game. And, well, I guess Rocket Men was it, but, you know, for a lot of reasons, Rocket Men didn't, quote, fly. Haha, I'll be here all week.
Ooh,
thank you.
No, you won't.
We'll find you.
Yeah, I'm not here. You know where to find me. I just wish somebody would put out, you know, a high-profile, non-collectible game about starships where it really focused on you just fly around and blow stuff up. I think it can be done in fewer tables than Federation Commander did it, you know?
Clearly, and I think that might actually be the Star Wars, you know, Starship game that comes out in November from WotC.
I hope it is, but that's a collectible game, so...
Oh, I forgot about the collectible part.
What about Lightspeed?
What?
What about Lightspeed?
That really has... You mean the cheap-ass one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that really has the feel of an abstract game. It's a more specific thing. It's a great game.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or, the old Star Trek Disc Wars. That was kind of fun. It was collectible, but...
I never did play Red Alert. I could probably pick some up at a discount at this point, and...
Oh, you totally could.
Yeah, and maybe enjoy it. But I still also have yet to play my vast stores of Range Wars, which was the Deadlands Disc Wars thing.
Oh, I've got some of that. Next time you're down here, we should throw down just to see where the tombstones end up.
Well, Chris, if you have some of that, we should play some of that at Gen Con.
I don't have any of it, nor have I ever played it.
I have plenty.
Nor does he plan to have it.
I have plenty, and I have not played it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But people have told me that that was one of the best expressions of Disc Wars that there was.
Really? Okay.
So I would love to play it. Yeah, I'll make a note now. I'm going to take some to Gen Con.
Well, if, like, the crazy discounters are there, and they have, like, a big pile of the Red Alert, I would totally pick that up and play it, so. Anyway, that's half the reason I'm excited to go, is to get weird crap, but we'll talk to Gen Con later.
It's all about the strange little things you find.
Yeah.
One of the organized events that I did at Origins, which was a great time and a great idea, I think, was what was known as the Origins Premiere Track, which was for unreleased games that, you know, known publishers were playtesting at the show, essentially.
Oh, that's a great idea.
It is. It really is. I mean, I gladly paid my money for that. And I had a really good time because it turns out that what I ended up playtesting was an expansion for Kung Fu Fighting by Slugfest Games.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, they talked about that a little bit when they were out here for KublaCon.
It's a favorite and end game, and it really is a fun game.
Yeah.
And I am NDA'd on the details of the expansion that I played, but I will say that I really think it's going to enhance the game.
Awesome.
Yeah, I don't think the expansion will be out at Gen Con. But they will have their sort of reformatted base kit
mm-hmm.
out at Gen Con.
Nice.
I think we mentioned before in a past show maybe that Slugfest said something about having printer issues like many people have. So it sucks that they'll miss Gen Con, but it'll get here.
I'd just like to take a minute and thank my girlfriend who just brought me half a beer.
Half a beer?
Hey, wait a minute.
Well, you know, it's still good. It still works.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, I'm clearly the glass is half empty.
Do we want to take a minute and do the beverage update that we didn't do at the top of the show?
Yeah, well, sure. We had other things to do, so yeah, let's do it.
Okay, what are you drinking, Chris?
I am drinking a Pete's Mocha Freddo with Scharfenberger chocolate in it.
Oh, wow.
It's really damn good.
I think you win.
I think you might.
Oh,
although I was until recently drinking some tomato and basil infused vodka that we made here at home.
Wow.
Yeah. Plus a few peppercorns. It was tasty.
It's got some points on the freakiness tip there.
Well, you know, home infusions are great, and I encourage them.
Okay.
I mixed it with a little soda, and it was great. It's, you know, it's like a Bloody Mary, but very different.
Right.
Right on.
And now I'm drinking some Kokanee Glacier beer.
Okay. Cool. And I'm drinking Gatorade because I'm still trying to recover from the most recent surgery and not drink anything too harsh for my system.
All right.
Damn. Bad times.
Well, as long as you're not drinking Haterade.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's right.
Dude.
What?
Moving on.
I know you like to hate. I'm just saying.
Move along.
I'm offended by the sense that someone might need aid to do it.
We're professionals here.
But yeah. The only other big kind of industry-ish thing that I want to note about Origins was I did a total flip-flop on Clout Fantasy.
That's right. I was totally mortified.
Because, like, at first it's like Clout is totally just putting their $15 starter for free in every reg bag, which they did.
Uh-huh.
And then I went by the booth because, I don't know, I was dealing with these things, like, and I just thought, I want to see if they have some tips on how to get these to land where you want them, which is really the principal problem with the game. I don't think even the boosters, you know, as bad as they are the principal problem with the game. I think just the fact that
the boosters were a big problem.
They're a huge problem, but they're not as huge as the fact that these things won't land where you want them.
So to clarify, my problem with the boosters, and I think many people's problem, was
you don't
get anything that can actually work with what you already have. You get like two chips for what, $4?
Or you get two chips for $2.
$2.50.
Okay.
And it takes you far too long to get anything that fits into what you have already for your armies.
Yeah, and that's a problem that may be getting worse.
Plus, they said they were indestructible, and they weren't really.
I can tell you right now that I know they're trying to revitalize this game, and there are so many stores who wouldn't touch Clout with, you know, a dead raccoon.
So I believe they have some sort of upcoming license deal going on, which I don't know whether it's announced or not, so
It's still firmly in rumor territory, but the rumor is that they have some kind of major comics license.
Right.
Yeah, and I did note that on the site as well.
Right.
But the second thing I posted about Clout was that I can't count them out just yet, because they're doing more pre-con stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing some pre-constructed stacks, and the stuff that they're releasing at Gen Con, they have a new faction. That makes the booster problem worse. but
unless they do that entirely pre-con.
But the pre-cons are making them better, so maybe it cancels out. But they're doing a pirate faction.
Cool.
And it actually looks kind of cool.
Doing or have done?
No, they're releasing this at Gen Con.
Okay, so it'll be a few months too late, but it's still will have some residual Johnny Deppism to it.
Yeah, see, really the reason that I did my turnaround and posted that I don't want to count them out yet is that I went and did their demo, and darn it, the game is just, there's a lot of fun in that game struggling to get out, and it may be that struggle is doomed, but it is there.
I'm a firm believer you can have fun with any game. Any game, as long as you're playing with the right mindset and the right people. Doesn't matter. It can be the worst keeping pile of crap ever, and you can still have fun with it just because of the right mindset and the right people that have the same mindset. You might not ever play it again and go, okay, we've exhausted that particular source of the fun, moving on, but I am a firm believer that you can have fun with any game. But that being said, I did not have any fun with Clout Fantasy, and I don't I must not have been in the right mindset or playing with the right people the couple of times I tried it. I tried, and it was no good for me. So, but you found a way to enjoy this, or at least see a hint of enjoyment.
I had some fun.
Okay, good.
I had a measurable amount of fun.
Then my point is sort of...
Hold on.
What? What's up?
I want to know how much more money you're going to kick down, if you've kicked any down at all.
Good point.
Like, seriously, not like, you know, is the game valuable enough that you're going to buy now?
I would consider buying the pre-constructed pirate stack. I would do it.
Okay.
But only pre-constructed.
Do you have any confidence that you'd be able to find another player if you bought it?
Not really. I mean, finding another player in the wild? No.
Okay.
I could convince, you know, given that the thing that you buy has stuff for two players in any case, you know, I could get somebody to play a two-player game with me. But really, in a game night, two-player games are selected against a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's working against it.
Yeah.
So you could recruit a newbie and teach them, but you don't think you'd find anyone out there that enjoys it that easily.
Not really. And as I was going to say, if Atlas Games had Pieces of Eight ready for Gen Con, I don't think they're releasing until late in the year, but if they had Pieces of Eight ready, the Pirates expansion for Clout would totally not be in the competition.
Well, as far as Atlas goes, did you see Grand Tribunal and or Recess there?
I saw Recess.
Yeah, that's in.
Yeah.
Did you take a look at it? What'd you think?
I didn't play it. I took a look at it, and, you know, I got the rundown, and I kind of love it. I don't know, you know, how wonderful it would be in play, but just... They have this kind of silly concept, and yet when you actually hear it all explained, it's almost like an indie RPG. It's almost like just this emotional epic is playing itself out every time you play this dumb little board game.
Okay. I didn't get that impression, but I have read through the rules. I have it on hand here. It's an interesting endgame conditions where you're two different school kids, one boy and one girl of the same color, and one of the end game things is if those two manage to get together and kiss, game's over, and then you figure out who won.
I love that.
That's pretty wild.
I love that. That's like building this weirdly trivial yet epic little children's story into your board game. I find that just really charming.
That seems like it would fit pretty well with some of the games Atlas has done. You know, Once Upon a Time, story building game.
Yeah.
But I didn't really get the impression of story building from it. I got the impression of very interesting mechanics and a theme that fits with it perfectly.
Yeah, I don't think story building is a goal of the game, but just, I think a lot of gamers will feel that a lot of what's going on in the game has a bit of a charge.
I think the theme fits so well on the mechanics that it will keep you in the moment, and you'll be like, "Oh, I'm getting close to my girlfriend there." You know.
Yeah, yeah.
The parochial school, while dodging the nun and school bullies and all that stuff. I think that'll be fun, despite the fact that it's actually a pretty cut and dried rule set of move this many spaces and that many, and try to get into position for more cash from your fellow schoolmates, and it's a neat little strategy game. I think
it has a lot going on thematically, definitely.
Yeah, I'm hoping to actually get a chance to play it soon and see how it all works out.
Do we have anything to say about the Origins Awards?
No,
we kind of commented on them when they were nominated, I thought, and you know, some of the nominees seemed perfectly reasonable, and others we kind of thought came out of left field. And I wasn't particularly impressed or repulsed either way.
A lot of the winners seem to be coming out of left field.
Okay.
The one really bright spot here that I want to comment on, I think, is the Vanguard Awards, which were not really ever up for contention. You know, I don't think that. Certainly the internet public was invited to vote on them, but just a lot of interesting things came out of here. Both awards for things like Battleground, Infinite Armies, which is the sort of indie card gamey thing that is a little bit similar to Battleground, but sold as a PDF, I think.
Customizable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's done as a PDF, I believe.
Yeah, Polarity, which is the magnetic area control dexterity game. And, of course, Perplexity.
Right.
Which I think is very soon going to be, like, in every retailer everywhere. It's a little bit strange.
They just got picked up by Alliance.
Okay, they got picked up by Alliance. I think they're going to be in things like Target and Toys R Us pretty soon.
I don't.
No?
They're struggling with their printing capacity right now.
Interesting. I saw some announcement, and maybe it's that they're going to put their old like Wave 3 cards into the mass market.
I don't know how they could get Perplexity in Target and Toys R Us and Walmart at this point, because the game's almost over.
I don't agree that the game is almost over.
Okay.
I think they have a strategy for doing for keeping it going on a kind of more episodic basis as far as the plot for a long time.
I was surprised so many things were put up for the Vanguard Awards and got it. It seemed like everyone, or maybe I'm completely wrong, but it seemed like everyone that got nominated won.
Well, we would have to check on that.
Right.
I'm excited to see, you know, the Academy. The quote Academy, unquote, you know, want to emphasize innovation. You know, I think that shows that in at least one respect, they have their heads where they need their heads to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is that admiring innovation, or is that hoping the hell that something will revitalize this dying industry?
Is there a difference at this point?
I guess so.
Yeah. But yeah, that was Origins, pretty much.
That's not a good part to end on. Origins was hoping we don't die.
No, I mean, I had more to say about Origins, and you can see it on the site. Something that I haven't talked about, it came out in, Paul Tevis did an interview with Ken Height on Paul Tevis's show, Have Games Will Travel.
Uh-huh.
And they recorded it on Saturday night at Origins, so not quite at the close of the show. But Ken had, one really interesting thing that he did, many interesting things at Origins, but he had a con exclusive book that Gamma kind of commissioned and kind of, well, he talks about it in detail in the interview, but, he had a book that was only ever to be sold at Origins, although I think they're going to do like the PDF version and sell that, not at Origins, but he had a book out called Dubious Shards. Some of which was material that was originally intended to be Delta Green material.
Okay.
Back when that game was more current. And all of which, I think, is Lovecraftian in nature. But he did a little paperback book in a small edition. And Gamma tapped him to do a con exclusive. And he set it up that way. And since Paul was so kind as to cite me as... you know, calling out the convention culture and the shift in, or at least, you know, what I kind of perceive as a shift towards selling gaming as an event and as a service rather than selling gaming products. He cited, you know, this convention exclusive thing as something really interesting that's kind of being ported in from science fiction conventions and such. A lot of sci-fi cons have had con-exclusive books and con-exclusive short story chapbooks for a long time, that then over the years they can collect those stories and sell them as a best of such and such a con thing, sell those separately. What I wanted to bring into that discussion was something that's been happening at Essen, at the big game fair in Essen, Germany, for years and years and years, which is a bunch of designers at Essen almost have made their career on games that are, I think, just only sold at Essen. And this is clearly very much like for the cognoscenti, you know, things that, you know, collectors get, and then they just build a reputation on that. But there's people who will just put together a board game out of very simple components and box it up in a very simple box and just do like 250 of them, and these are the only 250 of this game that will ever be made in this version. and they will only ever be sold here because they can sell them out there. And in part, that's dependent on the culture of Essen. But really what I'm saying is that for people, at least in role-playing, where, you know, that you don't have those kinds of expenses, you can just print up a book through Lulu.com or whatever. For people who just want to make 200 copies of a book and sell them at Gen Con, it's not as if you have to wait for the con staff to tap you on the shoulder. You can just do that.
That's been done before. I have a game that only ever was sold by some guy wandering around, selling them out of his car and bringing in backpack loads at N Origins years ago. I don't know that it was necessarily a great game. I just bought it because of the name. It's called Pimp. Pseudo role-playing resource management game where you make sure that your various resources are out gathering the money in the way that they do. Bought it for an novelty. Haven't played it anyway.
Was that specifically an exclusive?
Yeah, that was more of the only way he could manage to sell it type of thing.
Yeah.
But then there's also all of the cheap-ass games, Button Men, that they put into convention magazines, the program guides. Mm-hmm. KubliCon this year had Reiner Knizia game, or I guess it was last year, a tile game. Sort of thing does get done, just not to the same scale where it's printed separately as often. So it's not an entirely new phenomenon, but it is interesting that Gamma got behind us and helped Ken to make it happen. That's pretty cool.
It is cool, and I hadn't heard that about Kubla. That's also very cool.
Now, my question is, I guess it's more to us of Ogre Cave. We've been railing against the whole con exclusive thing, and how I actually made an extensive post once saying how WizKids was kind of ruining GTS and the consumer cons by having these great big monstrosity figures that you could only get there, and people would fly in from all over the world in some cases just to get that figure and then couldn't because there were only like 100 available, breaking into each other's rooms or cars at the hotel to get them from Wizard World LA. These are a different kind of con exclusive and don't have the same must-have-them-all type of pull yet, but why are we behind this when we're not behind the WizKids big exclusives? Or are we behind all of them now just because we need some excitement in this industry?
I'd like to start.
Okay.
There's a huge difference between a role-playing game, you know, that you can only get one place, you know, a couple hundred copies are printed, blah, 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 mm-hmm. with a piece that WizKids hands out that then makes tournament legal, which then breaks, you know, tournament format because those figures are usually overpowered for their cost.
Right.
So that they become almost requirements to be competitive in their tournament structure. That's stupid.
That's the obvious comparison right there is this is a competitive tournament sport type of thing, and it's comparing apples to oranges. But I didn't want to sit here and pretend like we didn't say that the con exclusive X was bad before, now that the con exclusive Y has come along and we're saying that's good. They are very different, you're right, but I wanted to point out that we've had issues with this sort of thing in the past, kind of.
Well, also, WizKids was doing that at GTS, and GTS is not a convention and should not be considered as a convention.
Right.
Well, They've done similar things at Origins and Gen Con. I don't think they ever had a really deleterious effect on Origins or Gen Con as a whole.
I think by the time Origins and Gen Con came along, they had learned Wizard World LA was where they messed up, where they advertised it in local newspapers and online ahead of time and things like that, and people literally flew in from other countries to get Galactus, I think it was.
Huh.
And were not able to get it because, for one thing, they were selling them before the dealer's room was open to the other retailers there in the dealer's room.
Mm.
So they screwed up big time, and they learned. And they didn't do it that way again the next time. But in that particular case, that's when we came out and said, okay, this is bad. Or at least I did. I believe we talked about it once before. But I see nothing wrong with con exclusives in general, as long as they're handled properly and don't abuse the congoers or promise them one thing and then give them another.
Well, I think there's also a big difference between when a big player does it and when a small player does it.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the same point Chris was making.
Yeah.
And I understand that, but I just kind of wanted to bring it up as an interesting comparison.
Let's look to the future for a second. Let's talk a little bit about Gen Con.
Yes.
And what we're looking forward to. I can tell you, I mean, not to be totally one note about this, but I can tell you that I am looking forward to a number of indie RPGs that are going to be debuting at the show. There's Clinton R. Nixon is going to have, I believe, for the show, a sort of remix of Dogs in the Vineyard that he's been working on for a little while, called The Prince's Kingdom, which is just kind of a fantasy read on that same game structure,
mm-hmm.
which I think some people will be interested in.
It kind of seems like a few of the story-driven indie RPGs could be rethemed and sold in a different manner. The Mountain of the Witch King, I think.
The Mountain Witch?
The Mountain Witch, sorry. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that could be rethemed, I think, and played again with a different set of circumstances around it.
A lot of the things that actually come with a setting actually have rules that are general enough that they can be rethemed many times.
Yeah.
But as far as the rule sets that are coming out that are more general, there's a game called Shock that Joshua A.C. Newman is doing, which looks really interesting. It's kind of an engine for generating science fiction that really is about social themes, the way that a lot of classic science fiction is, and has this kind of neat little mechanic about picking a few issues and making a little grid out of them, and then making characters for each slot in the grid, and so on and so forth. And he's just also a great graphic designer and brings a lot of production value to his stuff. I think people are going to be excited to see his work. There's Push, which is the first issue of a journal of role-playing game design that's going to have a lot of interesting things in it, including a couple of self-contained games that I'm looking forward to. And, of course, I'm looking forward to Dreamblade.
Of course.
Yeah.
Which everyone kind of expected to have seen, or at least have been hyped at Origins, but since they weren't there...
Well, yeah. But folks have now seen it at some game stores. There were the demo kits that were sent out.
Yeah, they did a real nice job with that. They gave us a nice kind of playmat to play on, a full starter, which I got to tell you, I picked this thing up out of the box, and I'm like, wow, this is a $30, you know, heavy, heavy piece of item here. And then they gave us a bunch of promo miniatures where if you filled out the little form that they gave us and pre-ordered a starter or boosters through a retail store, you got to take that figure with you at the time. So, kind of cool.
Right on. Have you gotten a chance to play it yet?
I played it at GTS, but I haven't played it.
Yeah, he played it.
Okay.
Yeah. And I should mention it again. I really, really enjoyed it. I think if... The one problem I am already seeing with this thing is people are coming in, they're seeing the D&D Minis looking packaging, you know, because it's packaged exactly the same way as a D&D Mini starter.
Mm-hmm.
People pick it up and go, oh, yeah, another collectible miniatures game. I don't think so. And I'm like, hold on, it's not really a collectible miniatures game. It's more like a collectible board game, you know, and that kind of intrigues them. Because it does not play like a collectible miniatures game. It really doesn't. And I kind of think they're... Much like they completely flubbed the announcement at GTS about this game, I really fear they are making a big mistake by marketing this like they would market a D&D Minis.
Yeah.
People don't want more D&D Minis. They've got enough D&D Minis.
On the other hand, I'm not convinced that people want a collectible board game either. Because, you know...
I don't know.
Navia Drops did so well, after all.
Yeah, and it was a really kind of bizarre niche market, whereas I could see WotC pulling this out just because they're the same people who make D&D.
Well, you know, they're really committing to the organized play for Dreamblade in a way that they haven't before. That's what my friends who are fairly high-level Magic judges are telling me. The organized play department at WotC that has gotten behind Magic, they're pushing Dreamblade in a way that they weren't for Hecatomb and that they haven't really for anything else besides Magic ever.
Okay. It seems like organized play is going to hook hardcore gamers more than anyone else, and they need to get more of a market for this to really succeed.
That's true. I mean, and we've been over how organized play is certainly not the be-all and end-all, but, you know, Magic organized play is the most successful organized play that there is, probably. So, to me, that says a little something.
Okay.
Other news bits that we've got, we talked briefly about D&D minis. There was some D&D minis news that was not terribly encouraging this week. Chris, do you want to talk about that briefly?
Yeah. The D&D minis players are, you know, they get excited about their game, they go out, they start opening pack upon pack upon pack, and often do it together, you know. They get in a room so they can immediately start trading stuff. And they're noticing statistically that inside the distribution for this game, there are two levels of rarity for the huge figures. There's uncommon huge, and there's rare huge.
Right.
And they figured out that then all these people started to talk on forums. Throughout a couple hundred cases, people figured out they never receive a huge rare from the box with the artwork of the Nightmare on Blackguard.
Oh, no.
So, all these boosters...
Out of a couple hundred cases?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot of cases. So, statistically, you will never, ever get a huge rare in this box of three pieces of cover art. Why would you want one of those, you know, when the other two, with different pieces of artwork on it, have the good figures?
And people are already marking up those other two.
Yeah.
The reason why you want those other boxes is because the purple worm figure is really nice. And it's uncommon.
But
once you've got enough of those, then you move on.
Yeah. That's kind of dumb. You know, they've been doing this for a few years now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's pretty unfortunate.
That's just really unfortunate. And I don't think it's really going to affect things too much, because the hardcore tweakers are going to buy those other two, you know, boosters off the shelf, or they're going to have, you know, retailers have to make little rules up or some stupid crap like that. Or, you know, you can put the damn packs out on the shelf, and the D&D players will buy whatever's in front of them, and the tweakers can have the ones that they want, you know, whatever.
This is reminding me of the days of Magic Legends, when certain retailers would realize they had a pack of super packs where they would start charging $50 or $60 because they knew there were four rares instead of one rare and three uncommons. I hope it doesn't go that route.
Well, speaking of hardcore tweakers, we had some news about Privateer. Kind of, they did a passel of stuff recently that's kind of unfortunate in my view. The whole thing about requiring paints in sanctioned tournaments.
This has been clarified a little bit. These are only looking to be tournaments that they run at major shows. It really wasn't clear. You know, there were a lot of people on the Privateer Press forums going, dudes. And they had to come out and clarify that that's what they meant. You know, so the quote-unquote steamroller tournaments that you'll see in most retail stores or at conventions, that's not a rule that's going to be in effect.
Okay.
So that's
okay.
Good news.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But a couple of other more minor things. They're doing their own Hordes tokens. They're taking that business back from Gale Force 9, which is kind of six and one half a dozen of the other to me. I mean, Gale Force 9 does great work, but, you know, okay, whatever. But to me, what's more interesting is they're doing their own line of paints. And to me, this is a classic example of, like, the focus group of one school of product development. I just don't see any reason why they need to do it, but they're doing it.
We were sitting at the store a couple days ago, me and my business partner. We're like, how many lines of paint are out there? And I'm not even talking esoteric lines of paint. I'm talking about, like, the top tier and then a couple smaller ones. There are 9 brands of paint out there targeted at the hobby gamer. Do you need 10? You know, do you really need 10 that are you know, that you're... The whole reason that they've posted on their boards were because they felt they could do it better. Well, I put a poll in our forums for the store. Our hardcore War Machine base was like, you know, we might buy some single paints if our other paints ran out. You know, that's not a lot of incentive for me to bring in these paints at all.
Mm-mm. No.
You know, just, yeah. So,
not kind of seems like the company going, wouldn't it be cool if we had our own paints? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's more or less what they expressed was the ethos behind the product on their forums. So,
Really,
it's an ego product. It's a focus group of one thing. And that makes me sad. Other bits of news, WizKids canceled race day. Is this new? I thought that they did this back when they more or less announced their layoffs, but maybe they just made it more official now.
It's old news, kind of.
Yeah, no more race day.
Toon Clicks is down as well. It's not on their list of things that they're going to go ahead with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Chris was really hoping Toon Clicks would come through, but
I was kind of hoping for it too. I was kind of interested, but I don't know.
I thought it was doomed from the get-go, so I think they're making a smart call to kill it, but I know other people had different opinions.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to talk much more about WizKids until a couple of other things shake out.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah,
we've kind of been there for this show.
All right. Should we talk about currently playing?
Sure.
I have not played anything, of course, again, except for the things I played at Origins, which I've talked about. But I'm having a game night tomorrow night, damn it.
Right on. What are you playing?
I want to play Enemy Chocolatier.
Nice.
I want to play... Jeez, I've got a bunch of things here that I just really haven't played at all. It's not totally out of the question that I would play some kind of indie RPG.
Wow.
Yeah, but I don't know.
You think? You only talk about them all the time.
Well, you know, I got a couple of coworkers coming over, and I don't know them that well. And
okay, well, yeah. You don't want to spring the, hey, look at my dildo collection. You know, you don't want to go into the...
Wow.
That is my new official euphemism for my shelf of indie RPGs.
Yeah.
Got to feel them out first, you know.
we're going to stop right there. That's the end of the show.
I haven't played much, so just go on with
that. No,
me.
Dude, it's not getting better.
I am, and, you know, I would totally launch into my whole thing about how I got to play Funny Friends, and I had a lot of butt sex, and I'm just not going to.
Yikes!
Funny Friends is Funny Friends sounds great, and I totally want to play it, but we'll talk about that next time.
I think that's better.
You have to stop now. Thank you for listening to the Ogre Cave Audio Report. My name is Mike Sugarbaker.
And I'm Alan Sugarbaker, and I'm very sorry.
And I have no shame. Goodbye.
Good night, kids. Hello, listeners. The long, legended, and storied, and sung about by bards, Ogre's Choice Awards 2006 have been decided, and we are going to announce them. And we're going to be announcing them on the next podcast.
For real.
For reals? Okay. Yeah, we have lists, and we have, like, nominees and badges everything.
Yeah, they're like computer animated and stuff, right? That's, like, they're actual, wow.
That's completely not true, but I appreciate
it. I heard ILM was doing it.
TV commercials.
Yeah. We're going to get Paris Hilton to talk about it a little bit. You know,
no, we're not.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
And then we made collectible pogs.
Yeah. Oh, my God, that's so wrong.
All right.
So listen next time.
Yes, be sure you check us. It's going to be on.
Really?
Seriously. Why are you looking at me like that?
Stop.
All right, we're done.
Ow, my skin.
What?